Hey, Brian Bieler here with Storage of You. On the podcast today, I have a great interview with Tom Butler. Tom's with Lenovo and has insight into the entire workstation offering from Lenovo, including the vaunted ThinkPad P series, which was updated this week. Their traditional desktop towers, and even the nano edge devices that we love so much and reviewed recently. Both are fantastic little products. So I think you'll like this if you're into end-user computing and want to hear Lenovo's perspective on all of that. I encourage you to take a listen. On the podcast today, we've got Tom Butler, and he's got a very fancy title, Executive Director of Worldwide Commercial Portfolio and Product Management at Lenovo. Tom, thanks for joining, and what the heck does that mean?
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, so basically, I lead a team of product managers that define and deliver the next generation ThinkPad notebooks and ThinkCenter desktops for worldwide sale and distribution. So my team and I are focused on what's coming, what's happening in the future of the notebook and the desktop market, and then delivering that into market, and of course managing that life cycle through. So sort of an end-to-end, and yes, it's sort of a large title or description, but that's in essence what I do.
Well, I want to talk to you about some of the IoT things. We've, as you know, been working with those nanos, did a couple of reviews on those a while back, and think those are pretty slick. And you know, the world of IoT is changing so quickly, and I know you guys have a lot of stakes in the ground there to solve those business problems. But before we get too far into that, you do have good timing. We're recording this on Wednesday the 17th. You did just drop a bunch of new ThinkPads today. And as the workstations guy, is it your fault every time someone that is in the ThinkPad army gets upset over the nub or the trackpad or the buttons? Is that all your responsibility?
That is my responsibility. Yes, our beloved TrackPoint, and we have a lot of loyalists who love that, the efficiency of hands on the keyboard and the ability to manipulate. And
I'm well aware.
But I would argue that we've made good strides on the touchpad functionality with our precision touchpad. You know, the responsiveness. We've increased the size, generation to generation. So we're trying to accommodate all users.
So today, let's hit off on the current news, and then we can sort of roll through some of these other things. But you've got a new P15, P17, P1 Gen 3, P15V. What is going on with all these machines, and how is the mobile workstation world changing?
Yeah, so if you look at the mobile workstation, you know, we really, and you know, quite a few new models, we're really making sure that we can cover more ground with our portfolio. You know, we've historically had, you know, just 15, 17 inch workstations. We introduced the thin and light P1 a couple of generations ago now, and we've sort of rounded out our portfolio with this new P15V, giving sort of a more of an entry or mainstream price point into the lineup in the range. So we want to make sure that we can cover, you know, all of our customers' needs. And what we're finding in, you know, certainly in the workstation market, there's been more and more demand on mobility as well as performance. And if you think about those are very much competing sets of offers. So for example, the P15, we now have up to Quadro 5000 graphics, which you historically would find in only a 17-inch workstation, which is much larger, of course, and heavier form factor. So really cascading that performance into more mobile platforms, but then also offering a range of offerings sort of top to bottom for this. Because again, the world is very mobile, and of course, you know, we'll talk perhaps a little bit more about this, but especially in the new, you know, I'll call it in the COVID crisis, or even the post-COVID crisis, we're moving to what I call work from anywhere, which is a pivot from I was just in the office, now I'm, you know, maybe I'm working from home right now, but more and more we're going to see just a work from anywhere type model.
Well, and having a capable machine is certainly part of that for the workstation crowd. And I was checking out the P15 specifically. You're still, so you got the bigger GPU in there. You still have dual NVMe SSDs, it looks like, Thunderbolt 3, all sorts of other good things. Tell me about this self-healing BIOS concept. That's one that sticks out as a little bit different. Is that a big deal to you guys?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the other thing that we've seen is an emphasis on, you know, security and capability that we have built around our systems. So the self-healing capability is, if you had a problem with your BIOS, you'd have the ability, the system actually holds and reserves a backup that it can revert to if you had a fault or an issue as you were loading up your next gen BIOS or your update to your BIOS. So that's something that we've rolled out into our portfolio this year. And it's part of the broader set of security features that we put underneath the ThinkShield umbrella. And ThinkShield is sort of our marketing term for all things security based. And underneath security, you could also, I would put manageability underneath that as well, because if you think about now more than ever, you know, IT support has been pushed to remote. You know, now I'm having, you know, if I was an IT director at a company, you know, in building, typically I'd be able to take in the devices by, you know, maybe at a loading dock, image them all by, you know, at that site, and then distribute them even by person out to my workers. And now if you now fast forward into this new climate driven by COVID, so much of this is now work from home, or again, this work from anywhere concept. A lot of companies weren't prepared for this. So now they're having to you know, mail out the systems, remotely touch them, service them, deploy them. So we want to make sure that we built in safeguards. So if you have someone who's updating a BIOS at home has never done something like this before, you want to make sure we got a backup or a failsafe.
Yeah, that is a bit of a terrifying thought now, thinking of the mobile workforce that was already mobile but would come back to the shop from time to time at least and be able to drop it off on the IT guy's desk and say, hey, this doesn't work, or it, you know, it's doing something funny, you know, like going to the mechanic. Yeah, I haven't even really thought about the concept of now all of those people that were salespeople or admins or whatever they are, not IT pros, having to deal with some of the maintenance tasks that perhaps they weren't used to prior. That's an interesting concept. Are you, as Lenovo, can you do more, or are you doing more there to let IT admins have more control over remote systems to do some of that behavior and manage the patching and some of the stuff that they would have done on their traditional corporate networks?
Yeah, certainly. And we've built in the remote capability and have had that you know, in all of our systems historically. And as we go forward, you know, things like the self-healing BIOS are new features we're rolling in. But the other thing that we've done, and we've really ratcheted up, is our premier support service that allows us to sort of offload some of the challenges our IT directors are having to deal with. So we can take on that first line of service. We've even built in dedicated sites where the end user now, who's having to manage the device at the home, can go in for quick tips, tutorials, self-help, trying to really help our again our customers offload some of that first line defense or first line support, so they can focus on the more strategic actions they need to plan around. And again, especially as they have pivoted a lot of their workforce historically that had always just come into the office, perhaps just come to a desk, and are now having to work, you know, coming to the office now is, you know, walking into the den or the living room instead of driving into or commuting into a workplace.
Yeah, I think a lot of us know that feeling. You know, I've been fortunate, you know, since we're a small company, to still be able to go to the office and actually, it's funny, for my productivity, I've been building up additional tools at my own desk, just giving me more flexibility, which includes this ThinkVision You know, this is not a product placement. This is Kevin and I both have these 44-inch widescreen ThinkVisions from you guys that are absolutely phenomenal. And just from a productivity standpoint, to have two screens up, two full windows of work, and then the laptop screen, and you know, I've got a dock and all these other sorts of things. I think everyone's had to work hard on their battle stations. And you know, I don't know if display is within your purview or not, but the display, I think, is something that a lot of people didn't think about until they had to spend 8 hours at their home office, not used to doing all these things, and now picking up the benefits of a split screen, or at least an additional screen for these mobile compute types, has been pretty useful. What's your view on the monitor space and what's going on there?
So it's, I don't have the direct responsibility for the product teams, but of course we work directly with them because all of my products are plugged in. What we had seen, you know, if I talk about trends, I'll first talk about in the office and then work from home. In the office, the predominant trend was a move to two 24-inch monitors, or that 144 that you talk about, which actually splits. Effectively, you get the screen real estate of two 24 monitors. We'd moved our entire ThinkVision line has moved to, you know, very small bezels. We've matched our ID with our all-in-ones, and we have tiny in-ones that can take in a desktop in the back. Those all match, you know, so you can put them side by side and get really that seamless, I call it mission control, where you have the multiple monitor experience. Variety of studies are out there that show you're much, much more efficient with twin monitors, at a minimum. And as you said, you've highlighted, you've actually got a three configuration setup where you can split the 44s into two full screens, and you have a laptop.
Oh, it makes a world of difference. Now, getting your budget approved may be a more difficult challenge. So even just adding one, or your space, you know, at home, I've got a 27-inch ThinkVision, which is great and still works well for my more limited time at home. But then when I get to the office, having the display, I mean, just seeing more data, and I'm a data guy, so just seeing the stuff is really powerful. And I think it's hard to underestimate what happens when you have access to more information, as you're even just, you know, writing an article, being able to see the spec sheet right next to it.
Yes.
And then still having email or Slack or something on your lower screen, just to, so you're still in tune with your org while you're focused on your task. I mean, it's really remarkable, the flexibility and the sort of the visibility into your world that it opens up when you do that.
Well, you nailed it. It's the, you're trying to get something productive done, yet you need to stay in tune with what your org is doing. Whatever team platform you're using, whether it's Slack, it's email, it's a link, you know, or some kind of instant messaging platform. And you know, now many more of us are on video calls as well, as we are today. Where you see the individuals face to face. And at the home, what's happened is, you know, everybody rushed home, of course, as we all had to do, say, to be safe. And many of our customers were not equipped with a dual monitor setup, which they might have had at the office. And immediately we started seeing more demand for, I need to get a second monitor in, or I need to get, you know, a larger screen in at a minimum. Because even that larger screen, you mentioned the 27-inch, if you're not on two 24s, or if you're just on a laptop screen, having that second screen where you can maintain that, you get more of a productivity angle. We recently launched this past year an M14 monitor, which is a mobile monitor, travel size, 14-inch. It's built to sort of emulate the 14-inch laptops we have in our range. Many of our customers just plug those in. It's a USB-C monitor, easy to go, and then you've got that twin configuration. And then, of course, if you're the dream state is the 44-inch that you have on your desk.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, after this podcast, hopefully your team forgets that we have these and we don't need to worry about sending them back. But you know, it's funny though. We've seen I think we've seen a prior iteration of that 14-inch you've talked about. Mm-hmm. And Kevin, who runs our lab, actually likes to use those in the data center for, he'll put a little adapter cable on it for the legacy ports, but he'll go around and use that as part of a mobile KVM setup.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So that he can, you know, just plug straight into whatever, you know, storage array or server we're spinning up, which is in a wireless keyboard and mouse, and he's off and going. But it's light, it's nimble, and you haven't seen our lab, but it is certainly not the pull out the KVM tray, everything's nicely cabled and beautiful, and every rack is organized. That is not us. That is not how our lab operates. So having the ability to just grab the key components and walk up to a machine and plug in is pretty cool. So I think that's another area where, you know, I know you guys made that mostly for the mobility audience, but we're using that in the data center pretty effectively.
Well, what you're highlighting is flexibility of setup. And again, if you cascade into what's happening now, is we all rushed home, threw everything into a whatever bag or backpack and came home, landed, decided where we were going to try to predominantly work. And since so many of us are on video calls, what's happening in the home in general is you sort of find yourself in a stationary position, whether it's the kitchen table, the couch, the, you know, a desk off to the side. And so more and more we're seeing customers sort of build out a little bit of that, again, that mission control, where I'm putting a second monitor, I'm putting perhaps a full-size keyboard, mouse, maybe an additional camera, get optimal lighting, a better chair or more comfortable setup, because none of us were prepared.
The chair is critical.
Yes. And so you end up with, even though you're mobile inside the home, you sort of have a landing zone. Many of our customers. Now, I'm speaking in general terms, of course. A lot of your listeners may be moving around the house, but if you're sitting down for a dedicated video call, you're probably going to be sitting down at a place where you can have that focus, and that's where you want that second monitor experience, as an example. And again, it's driving that flexibility of setup, like you highlighted with your in your lab.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point of how good this monitor is and how sad you should be if you don't have one. But actually, in our review to help highlight the width of this thing, Kevin took, I just had to pull the picture up and recount, 7 energy drink cans and line them out in front on their side. So those are whatever those are, 16-ounce cans, long ways on their sides. That's how wide that thing is, and it's darn impressive. All right, so we've talked a little bit about mobile computing. We have 3 workstations from you still in their shrink wrap sitting in our lab waiting to be violated by Kevin and his team for review. The traditional tower or even micro tower workstation is far from dead, right? We still have Creative Pros and others that need the GPUs, the multiple GPUs, the RAM, the storage. Just give us a quick view on the tower workstation space and what you guys are seeing there.
Yeah, sure. So as you highlight, if you're looking for the high horsepower for content creation, whether it's architects, digital content creation, you're going to need the horsepower. And you're going to need the expansion and capabilities, multiple GPUs, of course, expansive amounts of storage, of memory. And so the market is still quite healthy for the tower workstations, because you can't put all of that performance and expandability into a mobile device. So even as customers are working from home or moving to work from home, they may be remoting into the tower or at the workplace, or as you do, you're going into the office, and quite a few of our customers are going into offices in limited fashion. So the more heavy, I'd say, heavy content creation or work in labs, we've got customers moving back into the offices in those sort of limited population. And then if you're doing, less heavy lifting, you perhaps are still maintaining a work from home. And it sort of depends, of course, market by market on how things are opening back up.
Yeah, I think the big one that we just got, the big tower, and this is again Kevin's area of trying to manipulate your reviews team to get the good stuff in here, but he told me, and I didn't even know you could do this, that he got a configuration I think that was north of 20 grand, like the amount of components, the storage, the GPUs that you guys can graft into these things now is not that you couldn't do it before, but it's really amazing in terms of the output on the super high end for those work use cases that require it. I mean, at that point, you're almost running a server underneath your desk.
Yeah, and as you think about the, couple that with the software license and then the expertise of the individual sitting in front of that system, there's really, it does really go up in price as you configure these out, but you need to have the utmost performance on hand when you're designing the next gen, XYZ, or you're editing or creating the next, Hollywood blockbuster, or you just sort of, you start putting those cycles and you measure those cycles in the time spent. Mm-hmm. Whether you're rendering a model and returning that, or getting feedback, or making edits and seeing the output, it really is measured in cycles. And so we do see a lot of our customers who are spending thousands and even over $100,000 in a software seat. They need the horsepower behind it to support it. And that's one reason our workstations, we work with a broad set of software vendors we call ISVs, and we certify the specifications. So if you're buying this software license or this package, here are the certified workstations that go along with it, with the right specs, with the right graphics cards. So you can assure yourself that you're buying the utmost performance for that content creator, as an example.
Yeah, and a lot of that's around Quadro RTX. So you guys have got support for the latest gen GPUs, CPUs, all that good stuff, which is pretty cool. Yeah, it's funny. We're working more with a contributor now that's in the Creative Pro space in video production, and he's talked a lot about the cost difference to get the next better thing to let him be more efficient. Is normally it looks like a lot to whoever's running the budget, right? But when he recasts it and says, well, look, we can't wrap this production or shut down for the day or whatever until I tell you we have it and that we're good to go. And so now you're not just talking about an extra couple grand in a PC or a laptop or a RAID enclosure or whatever. You're talking about dozens of people waiting on him to say, I got the files, they're clean, the color's good, whatever the things are.
Yeah.
And so you've got to look at those larger operational issues and not just the, bomb cost of a single component in that workflow.
Yeah, I mean, this becomes a critical path. I mean, you can stall out an entire project if you can't deliver it on time up through to the team that's got to take on the next action or activity. And so it really does, it becomes critical, which is why you get into those, multiple $1,000 configurations.
All right, I started with it. Now I'm dying to talk about Nano. I can't wait anymore.
Yeah, let's talk about Nano.
So these things, and it's too bad because we're sitting here mid-June, and that's, I think, probably about when we would be meeting in person and doing this at Lenovo's annual event. But I know you launched these things sometime in May last year. I think you were showing them off down in Orlando. I saw them down there, and you had some VR exhibits, and you had a lot of other things going on. And I don't think at the time, at least I didn't quite at the time, understand the impact of what these IoT devices were going to bring. And I think there's two things happening, that Lenovo was out ahead of the IoT surge in some ways, and then that surge sort of came to you, and now there's this confluence of things going on. But for the traditional IoT devices, I've always thought of them as boring plotting data gatherers that didn't really bring a lot more to the table other than having legacy ports on them. And I think, I don't know that I'm in the minority in that thought in terms of what a traditional edge gateway does in the IoT world. And so when we saw the M90N-1 Nano, the IoT guy, that's the one with the heat spreader on the top, fanless design, and then the Nano M90N come in, I mean, we were just struck by both of those for a number of reasons. You talked earlier on about design ID. These guys carry that through all the way, the ThinkCenter, the little red light that, that lights up. And then, you know, when you tear the thing apart, that's where it gets really interesting. And you see things like the LTE card, the dual M.2 SSD slots. I mean, just stuff that's way past where any of these devices really were before. Just tell me a little bit about why these two devices specifically were so important for you guys to go create, because this was not a light lift to put these things together.
No, yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'll actually back up a little bit and give you just a quick history. If you look at what was happening in the desktop space, you know, I talked earlier on, you know, if you take the traditional desktop, especially that market, if you looked at a tower, you'd put that tower underneath a desk, let it gather dust and, just run continuously for 4, 5, 6 years underneath. At some point, it would be replaced, which means somebody would crawl under that desk, unplug all the cables, pull that out, put something out, put the next one in. And over time, and this happens, you know, this is sort of a pre-COVID statement, you know, we saw workspaces get a little smaller, a little bit tighter. So we started getting, we call it the miniaturization of desktop. We started getting push for, you know, something smaller. We had these large, you know, 18, 20, 25 liter towers. We put in small form factor towers, you know, 8, 9, 10 liters. And we actually in 2012 launched the first Tiny, which is a 1 liter chassis, about the thickness or the height of a golf ball. It actually, I'll date myself, I guess, but you know, if you take a few CD cases and stack them on top of each other, maybe 3 or 4 CD cases, it's about that size, that footprint. And that was the first, that was the launch of this new wave of what we called ultra small form factors. You know, and other competitors have subsequently followed. But with that, we really started building out a rich ecosystem around it. So we launched a device called a Tiny-in-1. So it was taking this tiny desktop, and you could actually just slide it into the back of a monitor, and it was effectively a build-your-own all-in-one. So now I've taken that monitor that we've spent some time on. You need that monitor on your desk for productivity, performance. And now I've got compute that I can slide in, slide out. And so instead of crawling under a desk, unplugging things, I just pop it out, pop the next one in, off I go. I could even redeploy the old compute. And of course, that's just one of the parts. The nice thing about that smaller form factor is I could put it anywhere, you know, in my environment, under a table. We have undermount, behind monitor, behind TV. So you could really place that device. So that was sort of that beginnings of the trends of miniaturization. So we continued to press on that. And so we started formulating around this concept of this Nano. At the same time, you know, IoT was starting out. And to your point, you know, IoT was just sort of, okay, let me just plug in this legacy set of, device monitoring at the edge and off I go. But there was more of a desire to get insights and capture real time, you know, capture the data real time and make inferences at the edge versus having to send up whatever you've collected back up to, I'll call it, you know, mothership, aka the data center or somewhere further up the distributed network. And so as we developed Nano, we developed these as I call them fraternal twins. You know, one is the Nano, the M90N, which is effectively, you know, the size of, you know, two cell phones stacked on top of each other, sort of handheld. And then this Nano IoT version, which is a smart edge device. So now I've got those legacy ports I can plug in. And I don't know if you've seen, but we have what we call an I/O box, which allows me to expand even further. So I can add additional legacy ports plugged into it. And that allows me to plug at the edge or place this device at the edge, and then not only capture what's happening that I'm plugged into, but also change or make insights and inferences immediately, as well as pass back up to the mothership, you know, the data center. So if you think now of a distributed network of these devices, I've got real-time action happening at the edge, you know, changes, but I'm also passing all those learnings back up to a larger data set that can then make changes, update algorithms, and push all of that learning back up so that I can update my entire network of edge devices. So that's kind of the dream state of how IoT works. It's all of this interconnectivity, and I'm capturing everything at the edge and in making real-time decisions. So as we started testing this with our customers, you know, a lot of, if you think of, I'll use two examples, a manufacturing example and a retail example, because we're all retail shoppers, although maybe we're not now, unless we're online. But if you think of a manufacturing site, you know, I've got, you know, lines of rapidly moving things through a manufacturing flow. And if something happens, I need to take a real-time action immediately. I either need to stop the line. There may be a safety incident where I've got to stop and protect if a person passes through or doesn't performs an action. So I've got cameras, sensors, alarms, all connected, and I've got to take an action faster than a human can sit at a terminal, see what's happening, and then decide if they need to stop or start. So you need that machine learning at the edge, or that capability. So that's where a device like that would occur. But at the same time, if an event like that happens, it's going to trigger a notification back up to the control room, let's say. And now I've got humans monitoring, looking at the control room, and then either realizing and taking action or correcting what's happening. So you sort of got that. That's an example. But probably a better example, since we're all, you know, consumers, if you put these devices into a retail environment, I can drive, and we're seeing this now, I can drive digital signage. I can actually take actions real time based on inventory levels, pricing fluctuations. I can control lighting in the shop. So if it's not, you know, I can actually turn off, turn back on, as an example, if no one is in that area of the store, why waste the energy? You know, if I can monitor flow, I can even monitor heat maps of where everyone's gathered, you know, so you've got intelligence that can be gathered at the edge, happening real time in that shop. And then if I'm a chain of distributed shops, then I could pass all of that back in and pass those learnings back out. So same kind of model, but it's pretty fascinating when you start thinking of this, the real time actions you can harness at the edge. And so hence the birth of these two devices. And the reason we chased the small size was so you could truly place them, you know, anywhere behind, underneath, you know, even further than that tiny form factor. Now I can truly just like tuck it behind, mount it really anywhere. And that fanless IoT version has a higher thermal operating temperature, so you can put it in, you know, loud, noisy, hotter environments and just sort of, you know, place it in and, you know, step away.
Yeah, we put a thermal shot of that in the review for the IoT device, and it gets warm. There's no doubt about that. And I will say, the plastic shroud is a good touch there, because, you know, it's got the metal fins on top and then a little plastic guy that's more to protect you from yourself than the system needing it for heat shedding. But yep. Really neat. So let me ask you a logistical question.
Sure.
Because those two nanos are branded ThinkSystem, even though they look and feel a little bit more like PCs. And then we've got the SE350 ThinkSystem, the edge server, which we, of all the stuff we've seen, in the last couple years. I think that is jointly in our group one of our favorite things that we've ever seen, and is one of only two things we've given an Editor's Choice Award to this year. Incidentally, the other one was Russ Resnick's AMD server. So you guys are both of those slots this year. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. We were already pretty stingy on Editor's Choice. I think the most we've ever given in a year is 7 or 6. So we're sitting here mid-June with 2, and they're both yours. But yeah, I can't help but to look at that SE350 and see little bits of Nano in that design. So I'd be curious as to your feedback there, because that one I assume is further outside of your scope, but maybe not. But a lot of the things like the way the LTE card is positioned, some of the design around the M.2 SSD slots, and then the way that the engineers have crammed so much stuff on board for the SE350, whether it's the 10 gig ports, which again, I mean, this is such a bizarre space. When we look at miniaturization, there always seems to be a massive compromise between small cost and capabilities. And one of the reasons we like the SE350 so much is that those compromises, I don't know exactly how, but you managed to put a bunch of stuff on board. So you didn't give up your PCIe slot, which in this case had a T4 in it. So that's pretty ridiculous for something so small. And then still had the performance with 4 SSDs in this configuration, in addition to more that could be mirrored for boot, all in something where you could fit 4 or 5 of these in a backpack. I mean, it's crazy. And the same thing's true on the Nano and the Nano IoT. When you take the cover off and you look at our photos where we've just got the boards that are sandwiched together with as much of the cover removed, so many components on board on the motherboard silicon that make it just so much more flexible in the spots where you need to add a card that you can, or another component, or another M.2. And all of those things across this Nano and the SE350 really make those systems infinitely more flexible than almost anything else in the market. Now, you may pay a little more for this than a small server that's a little more traditional server out of your group or anyone else's that you compete with. But the net result with the density and the flexibility of these things is not surpassed by anyone, I don't think, in this space.
No, well, thanks for that, and also thanks for the Editor's Choices as well. I'm hoping Nano will be considered as well. What you're identifying is a scale of compute. So what we started is, and with the SE350, that's coming from our data center group based, focused on servers, storage, etc. But what we're doing is we're starting at the sort of the baseline with Nano, and as you identified, we've built in flexibility to add additional SSDs, flexibility to add LTE, and then we scale that. And so if you need to go beyond that, you move up to, could be a workstation, could be a tiny, could be a workstation, could be this SE350, could be a dedicated server. Really depends on the horsepower you need at the edge. And so when we designed the Nano IoT, we took that into consideration. There's only so much headroom we could put into that small device, that footprint, but we were designing it to meet that layer or that level of compute and flexibility built into the chassis needed before you stepped up to something larger, bigger, more powerful. And and again, you sort of move up and down the performance stack. And that's the beauty of having this complete portfolio view is, when we're building designs like this, we're taking into consideration what our customers need, what kind of problems we're trying to solve. In this case, the smaller footprint, the low, the compute needed at the edge versus before you move up to the next stack. But again, it's all back to what scale of compute do you need? And that's why the SE350 exists as well, because we had some of our customers need server compute and processing at the edge. So it just depends on those, again, those workloads coming in.
Yeah, it's interesting with that shifting conversation of where data is collected, where data is analyzed, and an action plan is created, and then what needs to go back to the core data center. I mean, those dynamics continue to change, and it feels like, you know, that we're really in an outward push from, you know, data center out to get more of these devices to the edge where that computation can take place. You know, the SE350, again, you could put 8 SSDs in there in addition to 2 for boot, or 4 SSDs and a T4 if you want to do, you know, some heavy GPU analytics at the edge, or, you know, and I know that server in particular is probably finding itself into a wide array of use cases, and we could probably do another podcast just on crazy crap people are doing with SE350s, and that would be good fun. So we'll take a note and do that. But on the IoT devices, have you seen anything, or I'm sure you have, what have you seen that was unexpected? Have you seen anyone try to make a hyperconverged cluster out of these little things? Is there anything kind of fun and creative that's going on out there? I'd be curious to get your thoughts on unintended use cases.
Yeah, actually, yes, you mentioned hyperconverged. I mean, we are seeing sort of arrays of, starting with a tiny, actually, that 1 liter, we've seen stacks of those put together as sort of pilots or concepts where you can put in the compute as well as the storage capabilities of those devices. I wouldn't say I've seen that on the nano side yet. I think what's happening on the nano, because of that small form factor, is they're seeing the advantage of that device in the ability to place it anywhere, and really, you know, versus having to put it back into a rack mounted but potentially a solution, whether it's in closet or in data center. You know, in terms of where the devices are being used, you know, we've got, I'd say, a variety of use cases coming in, whether it's digital surveillance. I've mentioned the manufacturing, retail, hospitality. You know, we've seen, you know, digital signage is one of these areas where a lot of our customers have wanted to put in these devices and just run, you know, continuous signage or have flexibility to control and change. And then in healthcare, you know, we're seeing these devices being placed into systems, whether that's the compute that can drive medical equipment, and that really kind of pivots into more of an OEM type solution, or just having that device, you know, tucked away behind the monitor, or even on a rolling cart. So the nice thing about the Nano is it's driven by or powered by USB-C. And so as you think about a monitor taking in power as USB-C can drive this device plugged in, we've also got, you know, battery backup scenarios where you have the device on cart and the cart has batteries, and so you can actually drive this device throughout, or have a failover, and especially in healthcare where you need that 24/7, 365. So it's been really more based on the footprint of the device with the Nano and the Nano IoT.
Yeah, well, the M90N will fit in the back of a jeans pocket pretty easily. It's barely larger than, you know, like a woman's pocketbook kind of thing. So it's tiny. And I'll end this by giving you a plug. Kevin sent me a link yesterday on the, you know, when you go to Lenovo.com. Currently, there's a ThinkCenter M90N. So if you want to mess around with Nano in a home lab, or even, you know, buy a couple dozen for a workforce that needs a computer at home but doesn't want the complexity of a tower, maybe doesn't need the laptop. So you've got one M90N, 8th gen Intel Core i5, Win 10 Pro, 8 gig of RAM, a 512 gig SSD, and some other stuff is going for $400. I mean, that's an amazing amount of compute in that tiny little box. So definitely, if you're interested in playing with a Nano, now is a fantastic time to snag one of those M90Ns for $399 with all those things and more that I said. So check that out. Tom, thanks for joining us. This has been a great conversation. Really appreciate your view on computing, on all the integration that Lenovo is doing, and all the great stuff that's coming out down there. Thank you.
Well, Brian, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
I want to thank Tom again for joining us on the podcast. Definitely, if you want to dabble with the Nano devices, the M900N for $399 is a just absolutely sick deal, considering it has a 512 gig SSD inside. So already you're starting off on a great foot, and a Windows 10 Pro license. Great little device, home labbers, people stuck at home that need to modernize their computer, low-cost computer for a kid even, a lot of great flexibility there. So check that out. If you've got thoughts or ideas you want to share with us, hit us up at info@storagereview.com. Our Instagram is growing. We've added 150 subscribers to that in the last couple days. So check out what we're doing there with unique photo and video content that we're not posting elsewhere. And hit us up elsewhere, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you like. For now, thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.